I think that we have some people in the studio now who...
Hi. I'm Pod from the SF Indie Media, and we're going to try to do an Enemy Combatant Radio show here remotely from Sacramento, and I don't know if we're getting relayed yet on the SF Indie Media site, but hopefully we can get that going as we're in process. And we've got Luke Anderson with us in the studio to talk to us about what's been going on today. And welcome, Luke.
Good evening.
And thanks for coming in to talk with us. I know you're on your way to the Spokes Council meeting tonight, so whenever you need to cut out, let us know.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit about your feeling of how things have been going today.
I think things have been pretty good. It's been definitely good energy. We pretty much controlled the space around the conference center for more than a couple hours to begin with there. I definitely think there was less police response than a lot of us have been expecting in the early moments, certainly. We were both confronting, disrupting the space. People being stopped in the cars all seemed pretty friendly, actually, as well. There was outreach materials being given to them. And, you know, I think we can pretty much declare a certain level of victory right from the start. Large numbers of countries didn't even come to this ministerial, demonstrating that the Bush administration's agenda on agriculture is certainly an isolated one. And right now, of course, there's the WTO action against Europe based on the rhetoric that we need genetic engineering to feed the world. And we had a great teach-in yesterday with people from Zambia, from the Philippines, from Mexico, really just kicking that argument into touch, making people aware, of course, that we're overproducing food. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to guess there might be political reasons why people are suffering from hunger. 25,000 people dying every day from hunger in a world which is already producing enough to feed 1.5 times the current world population with an adequate nutritious diet. And of course, the Bush administration in this meeting here in Sacramento is pushing a corporate-controlled agriculture agenda. Also, Coca-Cola in the back rooms talking there about water privatization. Shorebeam Corporation, who's bought the rights to the ribbon-cutting ceremony. I think they spent $20,000 so that they could cut the ribbon with Ann Veneman, the agriculture secretary. Then people went down to the community garden because it was pretty clear that people wanted not just to confront and oppose and disrupt this ministerial, but they wanted to do actions that really demonstrated what it is that we stand for. And right here in Sacramento, we have a community garden, in fact, the only pesticide-free community garden in Sacramento. And people based here in Sacramento have been struggling for over a decade to try to save this community garden. The Community Area Development Agency, Sacramento, want to sell this to a developer. I'm not sure if they've actually sold it, but they've definitely kicked everyone out the community garden, which was providing organic food for the local community. The trees, when people got inside the community garden, bulging with fruit, apricots, cherries. People had a good time in there. People brought plants and compost from all over California to, and there are now people there locked down in the garden, occupying that space.
Yeah, and I was down there. It was beautiful.
And fantastic.
They were locked around the apricot tree, and there's about 12 of them with the pipe lock-ins, and just having a good time. The brass band came along and started playing. I think it was the Berkeley Liberation Orchestra playing along with them, and a really beautiful scene there in the park, and bringing the whole story into a local issue, a really powerful local issue.
Absolutely, and we've seen like countries like Cuba, where nearly half of food production is coming from local urban-based community agriculture. And here we've got California being put forward as a model for the rest of the world. In fact, the U.S. is trying to export internationally an agriculture model that isn't working here in the United States. There's more people in prison in the United States than there are farming the land right now. And that's one of the reasons why we've had family farmers groups here joining with us in the streets, joining with us in the teach-in, saying they oppose the decisions and the whole agenda being put forward at this ministerial in Sacramento.
What sort of local farmers groups or California farmers groups are here to protest all this?
Well, there are some California-based farming groups, such as the Ecological Farming Association, who actually have managed to get enough money to have a booth inside the conference. And then out in the streets with us, it's been more like Family Farm Defenders, the National Family Farmers Coalition, a sort of a national network of farmers groups, all of whom clearly see genetic engineering within its context, corporate-controlled agricultural model that, you know, they don't like as independent-minded family farmers, because the last thing they want to do is become ever in smaller and smaller cogs in a huge corporate machine. One of the big issues that they were raising is the farm bill, and the way the farm bill supports big corporate farms and really is all whole part of what makes it uneconomical for farmers here in the United States to be able to continue to stay on the land, but in particular internationally. In the past years, there's been spates of hundreds and hundreds of suicides in Sri Lanka and India, farmers swallowing their pesticides, the reason being that when US and the European Union give such huge subsidies to agribusiness to export corn and other commodity crops, under the costs of production, there's no way that farmers in an international market in countries like India and Sri Lanka can compete.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that's sort of spreading the language of, say, what's happening in a place like Brazil, where the people are like trying to reclaim the land through the, I forget what it's called, the MST, land reclaim movement? Is there anyone kind of sharing that language with these farm worker groups here in California? Or?
Well, the farm workers groups here, like National Family Farms Coalition, are the U.S. representatives of Via Campesina.
Okay.
Via Campesina, the largest people's movement in the world, representing hundreds of millions of peasant farmers. They have called on people here in the United States to denounce and disrupt this ministerial. It's very clearly seen as something that does not serve their needs. And so people have been talking about, you know, the causes of hunger, one of them of course being the most prominent being lack of access to land. 8 out of 10 farmers in Central America don't have access to enough land on which to feed their families, and yet you've still got huge areas of land unplanted, held by big landowners, and the movement you referred to, MST in Brazil, have shown that all it takes for a community is a small piece of land for them to be able to feed themselves, work out their own educational systems, their own cottage industries, and their own sort of local political systems.
Yeah, I was imagining that as we were in the park, the Sacramento Park, like if that were actually like, you know, a community project where they were farming out of that land, you know, how much of that community here in Sacramento could that provide for? You know, it was like. I could see a huge potential for that, rather than, you know, seeing it turned into condominiums or whatever they were talking about. That was gonna the threat that's happening here locally in Sacramento. You know, what can we do to make you know, community gardens like that happen for us in our communities here?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that it's good to get as well is that community gardens not just about, you know, health food shops and, you know, organic bagels. It's like, you know, this is a community garden that was feeding the homeless with fresh and nutritious food. A lot of people we had in the teach-in yesterday, people working with homelessness issues here in California, they were talking about the food stamp system that exists in California, which is basically the last the last option available to poor people in the United States to make sure they get food. But the food they get in these food stamp systems is usually canned food, it's usually cookies, it's usually just shit, basically. And often the people going in to get this food through the food stamp systems are people who already have health problems, have stomach problems, have diabetes problems, and these are the last things they need. And I know that Catherine Sneed from who works in the Bay Area, working with a sort of agriculture and spreading food out through inner city areas, she was describing experiences, not at this teaching but a previous one, where she would be handing out vegetables, or friends of hers would be handing out vegetables in the inner city areas, and there'd be like 8-year-old kids who'd never seen what a broccoli looked like, who'd never seen, you know, just common ordinary vegetables. They just hadn't been exposed to them. And so when people say, oh well, the only thing we need to do is, you know, buy organic food and support our health food source, I mean, yeah, sure, that's a good thing to do, but that's based on access. And in most of the inner city areas, there just isn't access to good, healthy, fresh fruit and vegetables.
Yeah, there's already like an environmental racism going on, where the, you know, some people who can afford the real food, the food that still has nutrition in it, it's like they can access that, but the majority, you know, the majority of people don't have access to real good food. So
yeah, and that's also of course like the big problem about thinking that you can tackle genetic engineering just by supporting organic agriculture. Of course we need to support organic agriculture, and of course in the long term, it's it's not cheaper to buy non-organic food. It's just the costs are externalized. They come in loss of biodiversity. They come in pesticide-related illness, etc. But with the biotech industry saying essentially they hope that within a few years the food supply is going to be so contaminated that there's nothing people can do about it, we really have just a few years of a window to make sure that we prevent the crops that haven't yet been commercialized from being genetically engineered and polluting the environment and the food supply.
Give us a little update on what's happening in Europe in terms of them being able to resist genetically modified foods up to this point. And from what I had heard from people organizing this here in the Bay Area and Sacramento was that this issue is a real spike in the WTO, because if we can really put pressure on this whole commercial agriculture mode, that it's already like facing so many problems, so many people are resisting it, and especially in Europe they're having a hard time pushing this through.
Yeah, in Europe we had a labeling system introduced back in 1998. By 1999, 2000, pretty much all the supermarkets had banned the use of genetically engineered ingredients, not because they woke up and thought they wanted to save the planet, but because there was massive opposition from the grassroots in Europe. Even the pigs and the chickens and the sheep in Europe actually get more rights when it comes to labeling than people in the United States, supposedly the bastion of consumer rights, because the animal feed also gets labeled in the European Union. The crop trials that have been taking place for the last 5 or 6 years in fairly large numbers in Europe have been reduced almost to a standstill. In Britain, communities have been responding to the threat of genetic contamination, the contamination of organic farms, by removing these crops from the ground. And there's yet a jury in England willing to convict people who freely admit pulling up genetically engineered crops. So it's certainly a different situation. Also, what you have in Europe is more awareness of other international agreements that cover genetic engineering. For example, there was an agreement under the United Nations which has just had its 50th signature, which means it's about to be ratified. And this was an agreement that was driven forward by the African nations. And they said to the countries such as the United States, Canada, and Australia that wanted to export genetically engineered foods, hold on a second, how come it is that you say that these products are safe and yet at the same time you're fighting tooth and nail against any attempts that we make to introduce international liability regimes that would hold you and hold the corporations liable if we get any ill effects? Tewolde Egziaba, the head of the African delegation, said, "Why should we, the poorest countries of the world, be expected to bear the risks of the experimentation of the richest?" Definitely, in every international forum where genetic engineering has been exist, the strongest resistance has come from the poorest countries of the world.
What do you think will happen? I mean, what's the potential here of what can the protests here in Sacramento and that affecting that European situation, where I'm sure the people who are representing that stuff, the lobbyists or whatever there in Europe, are a little under siege to kind of go along with the pressures being put on them by these big corporations like Monsanto and the U.S. agenda, basically, that's going along with the corporate agenda. You know, what kind of impact can we have here on that situation?
Well, none of the European delegates, European Union delegates, came in the end to Sacramento.
Wow.
Which is definitely a sign of not very good relations between the United States and Europe at the moment.
Excellent.
And that's kind of understandable given the past few months. One of the jokes is that the United States is sort of positing this whole thing as, you know, European governments acting to protect their own agriculture. That's why, you know, they've got all these cumbersome regulations. That's why they don't want to allow commercial approval of genetically engineered crops. But, you know, the joke is that most European governments absolutely solidly behind the introduction of genetically engineered foods. In fact, Burson Marsteller, the PR company that also provided crisis management to the Indonesian government after the massacre in Dili in East Timor, Burson Marsteller also advised the Union Carbide after the explosion of their chemical plant in Bhopal, and surprise, surprise, they were advising the biotech industry in Europe. They advised the biotech industry to refrain from partaking in public debate and leave it up to the politicians and regulators, those assured with public trust, to assure the public of the benefits of biotechnology. So the PR companies were confident enough to tell the biotech industry to back off and leave it up to European governments to promote genetic engineering. the reason that there are all these delays and strangleholds in approval within Europe, again, has come from a much greater public awareness in Europe about what genetic engineering is all about, and the governments in some cases have been dragged kicking and screaming. I mean, the British government was actually advised by its own bureaucrats that if it gave into the United States and allowed full commercial planting of genetic engineered crops right now, that there would be a rural revolt. So in terms of what impact we in the United States can have on proceedings in Europe, I think raising awareness about the whole WTO process. I mean, one of the things people in Europe have said for ages is, great, take us to the WTO over biotech. It's going to remove any remaining shred of legitimacy there might be in the European public mind over biotech. Because one of the reasons I think there's been a lot of opposition in Europe to genetic engineering has been because it's seen as American imperialism. It's seen as driving forward U.S. corporate interests. And people in Europe don't like that very much. Not that we're unfamiliar with empire, of course, but we've done that for a very long time. But certainly, there are cultural differences, relationships with food and relationships with agriculture that are different in Europe compared to the United States. In Britain, for example, our farmland, that's where our wildlife is. It's such a densely populated country. We don't have huge areas of land, we preserve as national parks. We have some, but they're pretty small. So when the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds, a very sort of respected mainstream organization that has 2 million members in Britain, comes out and says, well, if we allow commercial approval of these herbicide-resistant genetically engineered crops, it could be the death knell for the remaining populations of already declining farmland birds. Obviously, people in Britain aren't happy with that. Just to say, I think Sacramento has been one of the most exciting so far already, one of the most exciting mobilizations when it comes to genetic engineering here in the United States. One of the reasons I say it's exciting is to see a lot of the groups that have been involved in anti-war protests, in shutting down San Francisco when the bombing started Iraq, getting involved in this mobilization, really expanding direct action to stop the war to direct action to stop the empire. And of course, empire needs to be stopped. Wars need to be stopped in all their forms. Arundhati Roy, the Indian activist and author, was quoted recently as saying there are two ways in which empire spreads its tentacles. One is with a cruise missile and the other is with a checkbook. And though the checkbook might appear to be more benign than a rifle or an outright military invasion, in terms of its impact on people around the planet, it's no less devastating. So meetings such as this one in Sacramento, where the U.S. is desperately trying to get support for its position on agriculture in the run-up to the WTO meeting in September in Cancun and the FTAA meeting in Miami in November. And the reason why the U.S. is trying to get that support is because some analysts have said that the whole WTO process could actually unravel in Mexico. One primary reason being continued failure to get agreement on agriculture. And the WTO ministerial that's happening right now in Egypt, things aren't looking any better. So definitely being here in Sacramento is having an impact on the whole free trade agenda of the United States.
And you brought up the Mexico thing, and that's the conference happening in September in Cancun. And where's Mexico on all of this?
Well, Mexico is an interesting example. Probably a lot of your listeners know that the corn supply in Mexico, even in remote mountainous areas and villages, has been contaminated with pollen, with DNA from genetically engineered corn. Now, that contamination happened in a time when Mexico hadn't even given commercial approval to plant genetically engineered corn. The reason that contamination happened is because corn was exported to Mexico as corn to be eaten. But of course, one thing that farmers see when they get a bag of corn is not just something to eat, but something to plant for next year. And so there's been widespread contamination in Mexico, which is the center of the world's genetic origin. It's the genetic origin for the maize crop, for the world's corn crop. It'll be interesting to see what happens in Mexico, of course, this September at the WTO meeting.
There's a Berkeley professor,
Ignacio Chapela, yeah.
Chapela, who's been out speaking a lot about that contamination of the maize crop in Mexico. And so you're in the Bay Area listening, and you might look for him speaking about those issues. And we could take a musical break and maybe come back, or you may have to get off to the Spokes Council. I'm not sure. If you can stick around with us, that'd be great.
I think I could stick around for another 5 minutes or something.
All right. So, okay. Hold on one sec. Actually, so we are here on Enemy Combatant Radio, trying to stream to you remotely from Sacramento, and Portland Indie Media has done a beautiful setup here for us. And Luke Anderson is here with us in the studio, talking about all the things that are going down here in Sacramento and how we can impact the situation. And a big story that has just really shocked me in the last couple of weeks was hearing this about the world's fish supply being down to like 10% of the world's fish are left for the coming generations, for our future. And that just sort of in my mind puts it all into scope of like what we're facing, you know, down the line here in the future. And you were just, before we came back on, talking about kind of the big picture of things. So what does that make you, you know, think about, and what, just in terms of the big future picture?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, we're facing the largest species extinction in 64 million years right now, about 30,000 species going extinct every year at the moment. In the last 100 years, we lost 75% of the genetic diversity present in agriculture at the beginning of the last century, primarily as a result of the industrialization of agriculture and the introduction of corporate bred seeds all around the world. In fact, there are even U.S. aid programs where farmers in the global south are encouraged to give in a kilogram a couple pounds of their local varieties of seed, and they are given in exchange hybrid seed from the United States, and their local varieties of seed are actually destroyed. These are actual aid programs that the United States government's involved in. And what we're facing in the next few years is not just further commercial approval of genetically engineered food crops, but very likely the commercial approval of genetically engineered forests, genetically engineered fish, again, to be kept in intensive aquaculture production, which is extremely inefficient. It takes about 5 pounds of smaller fish to produce 1 pound of farmed salmon. And yet fish farming is, you know, promoted. In fact, industrial fish farming is promoted as a solution to hunger. So it's just as false a solution as genetically engineered crops are. And to give you a sense of just how weird things are starting to get, last year there were field trials in San Diego of corn plants engineered with human genes, engineered so that the corn plants contained a rare class of human antibodies that attack sperm. The idea being that these corn plants could be turned into some kind of plant gel contraceptive that kills sperm on contact. This is an example of what's called farming, pharming, the use of food crops and animals as chemical and drug factories. There's 1,000 genetically engineered sheep in New Zealand engineered with human genes so they can be milked for the human blood clotting factor alpha-antitrypsin. There's goats engineered by a Canadian biotech company, Nexus, engineered with a spider silk gene so they can be milked for the spider silk protein to be used by the US military for the development of protective clothing because of the strength of the spider silk. So these things are already happening. And we really do have an opportunity now to build a movement that's strong enough to turn this momentum down around. In Europe, if we were to have said 5 years ago that we thought that within a couple of years all the supermarkets were not going to be using any genetically engineered ingredients, you know, we would have just like thought we were just being wildly optimistic. And it happened because people who cared about this were willing to do whatever they could to make a difference.
It feels a little grimmer here in the States because, that's why I was sort of looking at how we could affect things in Sacramento on the European situation, because it seems like that's where the doorway is open for us to communicate to these people. It almost seems like when you're talking with U.S. agriculture people, with the people who are representative in government, it is the same thing. You're talking about like the same as if you were talking to a Monsanto executive, you know. So what's the doorway to crack open?
It's much harder in the United States. This is the corporate fortress of the world, and it's way harder to affect change in the United States. It's way harder for people to get access to information. I was doing a bit of research on the field trials that are taking place in Hawaii, which is now one of the main international testing grounds for experimental genetically engineered crops, in particular for these pharmaceutical crops, crops with human animal genes in. And I was looking through the information that the US government puts out about the field trials that are taking place, the companies that have received permits, that kind of thing. And one of the lists on the website is a source of genes, and sometimes the source is named, but this thing kept on appearing and I wasn't quite sure what to make of it. I thought maybe it was just some scientific or technical term I didn't quite get, you know, some strand, you know, sequence, DNA sequence or something. But then I finally got it. It was the CBI. Was the letters I was seeing. And it's the CBI gene, the confidential business information gene. The corporations in the United States aren't even required to give the U.S. government details about the gene sequences that they're engineering into some of these crops. Having said that, I think right here in California, I think there definitely is the possibility to get a moratorium so that we don't, for example, get the commercial planting of wheat, which is coming up in a year or two, rice, which is coming up in a year or two. I mean, it's difficult enough already if you go and eat out to avoid genetically engineered ingredients when you've got it in the soy, in the canola, in the corn. But once they've commercialized rice and wheat, they've essentially prevent anyone who wants to avoid eating this stuff from eating out. I think there is a way to do this, and I think it really also helps internationally isolate the United States when people elsewhere in the world realize that not only is the United States isolated, the U.S. government position, you know, far away from their interests, but in fact it doesn't represent the interests of people in the United States either. And responding to a call to action from people across the global South, seeing a good turnout in Sacramento, I think that helps. I remember hearing Kathy Kelly from Voices in the Wilderness, who's on the ground in Baghdad when the bombs were dropping on Iraq, and she was being interviewed on Democracy Now, and at the end of her interview she said, I just want to say, like, people here know that there were hundreds of people in San Francisco arrested trying to stop this war, and it's appreciated. And although that might not mean very much in terms of like some kind of explicit political impact, I think it means something that internationally people recognize that there are people in the United States who are standing for a vision of social justice and ecological sanity. And I think the more extreme and the more insane the Bush administration gets, the more those of us with a radical position in the United States are going to seem like the only sane ones here. And I'm sure there's going to be more and more influx of support from people's movements, from people around the world, to those of us in the United States. Because as Patrick Rainsborough said yesterday on his panel at this teach-in, you know, it's only people in the United States that can implode this empire.
Mm. Well, let me just get one last perspective maybe. We're here in Sacramento, which is very close by to UC Davis, University of California of Davis. And there's a lot of students out here protesting. I met some of them today while I was in the community garden. And how do you feel, or what? How do you see the possibility of student organizations and people working on the issue of corporations entering the universities here and totally subsidizing all the research that gets done and sort of controlling what happens at these facilities? And we're here near UC Davis apparently because some of these WTO delegates were going to be taken to see some of the model of genetic engineering at a university.
Yeah, I mean, just I'll answer your question, but just one aside, another victory we've had is that we understand that a lot of the field trips that were planned have also been cancelled because they wouldn't be able to guarantee the safety, or, you know, they wouldn't be able to guarantee that delegates would be able to get out without disruption. I think there's a lot of opportunity in the United States for student organizing around genetic engineering issues, but I don't think it's going to really grab people's attention if it's just presented as a sort of food safety issue. I think in order to get people's juices going, it really needs to be presented within its context. Empire, racism, ecological damage to the environment, and all the other problems, you know, the corporate appropriation of the genetic resources of all life on this planet through patent regimes that give corporations the right to patent indigenous knowledge from all around the world. I think when presented as a systemic critique, I think people get excited about it. And I think there is a real opportunity for students and student organizers to take genetic engineering on as an issue. And one of the reasons I say that is because talking and like studying these issues for like a few years, one thing I've noticed is that people through genetic engineering are able to actually get a lot of things that might seem rather abstract. Definitely in Europe, like when genetic engineering became an issue, people got the WTO for the first time when they felt like, okay, so whatever we decide in Europe, you know, we might not have any choice because there's this thing called the World Trade Organization that's going to settle the dispute in some unaccountable back room with a, you know, group of men in suits. And people also started to get issues of colonialism and corporate colonialism through genetic engineering. So as an educational tool on its own, as a way to present a systemic critique of the economic system and of the power structures in the world, I think it's a very effective organizing tool.
Well, thank you for being with us, Luke, and let us know if you can when you get back what's happening from the Spokes Council meeting tonight. We'll try and relay some of that information. But really great to talk to you here in the studios of Sacramento, Portland Indie Media, and Enemy Combatant Radio with you. And we'll cut to the song from Seize the Day about Monsanto. So thanks again.
Thanks very much. Cool.
They're breeding gender-bending babies who won't be breeding none, 'cause PCBs, yeah, are in the seas, yeah. We like to think that there's a little piece of us in everyone, 'cause we're Monsanto. That's right, Monsanto. We're turning Satan into Santa by giving kitties cancer coming through now. We're changing you now. The Mother Nature Terminators of food and health and hope. That DDT man, don't let on me, man. 'Cause we had all these creepy crawlies falling on the food we grew was a revolution. It's just a shame that what we sprayed on made the turd and fox stink too. Let me remind you, about Indochina, then commie dominoes were falling, so they sprayed them into hell. Peasant farmers, orange pajamas, we made their jungle cover wither, then we withered them as well. 'Cause we're Monsanto, that's right, Monsanto. We're turning Satan into Santa by giving kitties cancer. Coming through now, we're changing you now. Mother Nature Terminators of food and health and hope. It's not our fault there's chemical warfare, but if there's daughters in dioxin, it's our duty to supply that plain poison. They washed our boys in a cancer agent from the CIA. Hey! I cannot tell a lie. From Pentagon came that drug aspartame. Our Pepsi Cola with no calories was every kiddie's treat when there were rumors it gave them tumors. Somebody by the data, and we call it future sweet. And you get more juice now from a dairy moo cow. Monsanto's daily dose of hormones, the mother's gonna swell. Bring the free love if you're in chemo.
and D must set the beat. But nobody can tell, cause we're Monsanto. That's right, Monsanto. We're turning Satan into Santa by giving kitties cancer. Coming through now, we're changing you now. With Mother Nature's terminators of food and health and hope. Robert Shapiro, well, he's our hero. He's on a mission with a vision of sustainability, which means we're going to keep on growing. Till we're the biggest corporation in the 21st century. In the future, for the big polluters, he span an eco-friendly line and redesigning DNA genetic eyes on that far horizon, where everything alive is privatized and every seed will pay. We got the soya, we got the lawyers, the politicians in our pockets, all the way to president, the press and TV to guarantee cooperation of your nation in our new experiment. You did not choose it, but you'll have to use it. We'll get our Roundup Ready fingerprint in every pie you eat. With every patent, be a bit more blatant. Tell a corporation's domination of your global be complete. Mr. Monsanto, Monsanto, we're turning Satan into Santa. Give everybody cancer coming through now.
Health and hope.
Are you sitting comfortably? Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin. Then we'll begin.
Oh, great man like you. I just don't know where I am at anymore.
Hey, you are listening to Enemy Combatant Radio. This is Pod, and we're going to try to give you a get a legal update, and let's see if this person is on the air with us. Are you there with us?
Yes, I am. I'm here at the Legal Center, and it's been very busy. We've just been first calls from people in jail. People are being held in Elk Grove in Sacramento. It's at the Rio Consist site in Elk Grove. We're going to be posting the address and the directions to that on the website. So far, we know that we have 15 people confirmed arrested. Able to talk to about 5 of them. A lot of people got hurt or injured while they were being arrested. They were complaining that they were sore and in pain while they were in jail. But it seems like people's spirits are pretty good. There will probably be people who are spending the night outside the jail tonight waiting for people to get out. Again, information about where the jail is going to be posted on the website. We also have 2 lawyers who are camped out of the area who are waiting for the first people to come out, and they will do outtake forms. If you want to help out with jail solidarity, please go to the Welcome Center and talk to Ember, who's the legal counsel at the Welcome Center, can help with that. Any other information?
No, that's great. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Feel free to call us if you have any updates.
Okay, we will. And basically, it's pretty arrested, but the cops were assholes when they were arresting people. About the last 6 or 7 people who were arrested were singled out and grabbed and nabbed. And so we're just encouraging people to not go by themselves, to really try and stay in clusters, and finally go to the Legal Welcome Center and fill out police brutality report forms. It would be really, really helpful for us if people could do that.
Okay.
Again, fill out police report forms at the legal table at the Welcome Center.
Also, we just did get a call from someone reporting at 16th and G, I believe it was, that police had surrounded one lone protester or something happening there, and we'll try to get more updates on that. I don't know if that's information you can work with over there.
Right now, I can't confirm any of that, but just that goes to show we really need to stay in clusters right now because the police want to people off one by one.
Okay, well, thank you for the info, and we'll try to get back to you later in the evening.
All right, thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sometimes all you need.
You are listening to Enemy Combatant Radio. This is Pod with you and Portland Indie Media Radio. And I believe we are finally getting relayed on the SF Indie Media site, so I want to welcome any of those listeners that are out there in the Bay Area. We do have a phone number here if you want to call us, and I'll, let's see, 916-470-6961 if you want to give us a call here at the Convergence Center in Sacramento. And also, I think we're getting put on the air somewhere around here in Sacramento, so if you're local, try to tune in to, I don't know if I'm supposed to even say this, but probably 92.9. I'm getting this as a hand signal. And we've got a really great studio set up here from the people who came down from Portland, and I want to thank them for making all that happen. There's all kinds of information here I'm going to have to come back to and read. So thanks to Jesse and Eddie and Luke, who was in here to tell us all the background of the WTO and agricultural stories, the battles that are going on there. If you missed that, I hope we did get it archived, because Luke Anderson's got all the info you need to know, or at least definitely will get you inspired to go deeper into the WTO information on agriculture and our struggles with all of that. And that is why we're here in Sacramento, to relay the stories there. And we're in the, are we second, third day here in Sacramento? Well, second day maybe, kind of. And it's going to be going until the 25th. And so we've got a few more days. I'm not sure if the radio will be up all that time, but stay tuned here and get all the info you can as we're relaying it from Sacramento. And try to break to some more music. What you were listening to was Spectre, a new CD from him out of the Brooklyn dub scene. And I'll just bring that back in, and we'll come back soon, so don't go away.